let's go to our next speaker, who was going to be here in person. Unfortunately, flight issues, like many of you had, prevented him from being here in person. But either way, we're very excited to welcome and to hear about this next project. Please welcome Parazide with Darkfi. All right, brother, can you hear us okay? All right, you're good to go.
I hope you're enjoying the conference. I'm sorry I can't be there, but yeah, some certain circumstances happen, and it's out of my hands. So I will talk a bit about privacy on the internet and give a high-level overview of some technologies that exist and things that are happening. And I'll try to present two projects and ecosystems that are currently happening. So let's start with a quote from James Comey, who used to be a director of the FBI, and he says, "Unfortunately, the law hasn't kept pace with technology, and this disconnect has created a significant public safety problem. We call it going dark." This means that what this means is technology is evolving, and people and developers and communities are building new tools to avoid state surveillance. And it's been happening since internet began. We started researching cryptography and encryption and these things because we noticed that other people actually like to spy on people, and we needed ways to protect ourselves. Since 2013, this has very much escalated. We have a huge expanse of surveillance and control apparatus, and it's happening with the NSA, it's happening by various nation states, and it's happening as well by big tech with companies like Google and Facebook and Apple and many of these companies that produce technology. The way they do surveillance is it's Google search histories. So, for example, anytime you use your browser, you don't even have to be logged in into your accounts or anything, but the Google system knows your search patterns and they're able to identify you. So when you use your computer in different countries, you can still be tracked through cookies and things. Social networks are something that's also very much not considered a surveillance thing, but many people like to post photos and many people like to keep logged in and following news and things. But then these servers where you log in, they can actually track your locations and your behavior, as well as reading your messages. So when you communicate on things like Instagram or Facebook or Telegram, these messages are not in your ownership. So what happens is any kind of subpoena can come to these by government agencies or someone, and they're able to read your messages, see who you're corresponding with, and you lose this sovereignty. And I think it's very much implied because your friends don't know your password. So but in the back of your mind, you think, oh yeah, my messages should be safe and nothing bad will happen. But many people don't consider that there is someone on the other side who is actively reading these, putting them into some algorithm, putting you on blacklists, disallowing you to travel to certain countries and various different things. When it comes to mobile phones, we have this duopoly of Apple and Google. So essentially, we just have two operating systems, which is the iOS and the Android. What they do is they give you all of these neat features. You can catch up with your friends and things. Recently, I saw Apple has this feature where you can track your friends all the time. So you see, you add someone as your friend and you can see their location in the planet in real time. And if you're able to see it, that means that means they're also able to see it, which is, yeah, getting scary. We also have transparent cryptocurrencies, which I call them transparent. That's what's considered by like Bitcoin and Ethereum. They're transparent in the sense they don't use any kind of encryption, but everything, every operation, anything, any kind of money you do, you send, or any kind of smart contract call you make, it's all public. So there are companies who use this data to track wallets and movement of money. So after that, let's just see like what a high level overview is of these tools we have to protect ourselves, and how we can reclaim sovereignty. So the first thing we that is essential, that is used against adversaries, is cryptography. It's used as means of protection against adversaries. So what we do is we encrypt things. And on the other side, we also have signatures, which enforce validity of data, that it has not been tampered with. Combining these, this allows us to build systems of decentralization and anonymity. So next slide. Encryption is used to, as I mentioned, it's used to encrypt data. So that essentially means hiding data. So there needs to be some key that allows it to read. This allows us to secretly share things with other people. So for example, if I know your key, I can encrypt some message and send it to you. And you should be the only person who can actually read it, not somebody else in the middle while it's traveling on the internet or in the post office or various things. On websites, you usually access them with the HTTPS thing. That's TLS encryption, and that makes it so nobody in the... not your ISP or any kind of data centers in the middle are not able to read what's happening. It's only you and the server who exchange the data. But don't consider this as something completely safe, because we have things like Cloudflare and Infura and these content delivery networks, which act as a middleman between servers and clients. And they say they're doing load balancing, but what the servers do instead is give them these keys. So companies like Cloudflare are able to read all data you're sending through to a website. For instant messaging and messaging in general, there are things like Signal and Session. And they use encryption for messages and calls, unlike Telegram or Instagram or these public kind of messaging systems. And also I mentioned transparent cryptocurrencies. We have cryptocurrencies like Monero and Zcash, and somebody also recently mentioned Pirate Chain. They all use encryption to hide mounds and senders and recipients of the money that's being sent. But these are all only the beginnings. Now, in the recent things, we have projects that expand this. So it's not just about sending money. It's also about doing smart contracts and able to do programmable finance. So we can actually enforce some rules rather than just being able to send money from A to B and make simple payments. I mentioned signatures as well. So signatures are used to enforce some data hasn't been tampered with. And that means you can prove that you own some key, and you if you sign some data or some message with your key, nobody is able to change it, because if it changes, it will not be valid anymore. When we combine signatures with encryption, that means we can authenticate this encryption, and then we're sure that we interact with the correct person. So if I encrypt the message to you, but I also sign it with my key, then you can be sure it's me actually who has sent you the message, not some external person claiming to be me. So cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum use these mechanisms to verify that transactions are correct. So if let's say I have one Bitcoin and I want to send it to someone, then I will make the signature to prove that's my Bitcoin and it exists in the state of the blockchain. So without this, the transactions wouldn't be valid. Speaking about recent breakthroughs in cryptography, there's much hype happening in the recent blockchain space where everyone is talking about zero knowledge proofs. They became much more accessible and much more efficient recently, since a year or less than 2 years. A lot of developers are using it for scaling because they're also useful for this. They allow us to prove knowledge of certain parameters or attributes, but with them, we only reveal the fact that we know them. We don't reveal actual contents. And this gives us new possibilities of encryption and anonymization. But what's also interesting, it's the first time in history we're able to prove computation faster than actually executing it. So in Ethereum, you might have heard about ZK-EVMs and things like that. They're not used for privacy. There is no anonymity involved with them, but they're actually used to make things scale much faster, because with zero knowledge proofs, you only need to verify one single proof rather than verifying many transactions, which takes a lot more time. So zero knowledge proofs are used both for encryption and hiding things, but as well as scaling. So next slide. Yes, so continuing on that, we essentially use zero knowledge proofs to prove knowledge of some data without revealing it. So I can prove to you, I can make a mathematical proof that I know certain numbers or some attributes of some coin, and I can publish it, but without revealing these things. So this allows us to build anonymous cryptocurrency. So for example, I can prove that our money exists, but we're also able to hide who is sending and who is receiving it. We're able to hide the amounts that we're sending and also the type of the funds we're sending. So for example, if we are in a network with multiple tokens, so like Bitcoin and Ethereum and whatever kind of token, we are also able to hide all of these attributes, and we just have a single coin, something we call a coin. And using zero knowledge proofs, we're able to validate that it's the parameters of this are correct. We can also expand these concepts to smart contracts. So I told Monero and Zcash use zero knowledge proofs only for hiding the parties they hide the parties in the money exchange, but we can expand this to smart contracts as well, which is something we do in DarkFi. So you're able to anonymize the caller of a smart contract, and you're able to hide metadata that is actually fed as parameters into this smart contract. And going further on, like an overview of decentralization and privacy, I've noticed a lot of people are interested in these topics recently. It's a big boom because people are realizing that the state is not your friend, the big tech is not your friend, and there is a lot of surveillance happening. So people are always looking for ways to escape this and reclaim their life and their freedom. So I mentioned Google is actually tracking you through your browsing history and your patterns of searching. You can use decentralized engines like Cirque, which also use in the background, they connect to multiple search engines, but it's like a hub which many people use. So you increase your anonymity set by just by searching through this instead of Google, and you'll get the same results. Alternative to Telegram and these messengers, you can use encrypted messaging. So for example, Signal or Session. Signal still needs a phone number to register an account, but it's still, the cryptography is legit and works. And Session uses similar kind of cryptography, but also doesn't need a phone number. And it also as well started using this peer-to-peer network, which makes it a little bit decentralized and also hides your traffic. But going on a higher level, you use these apps, but there is no, you're still usually stuck in the iOS and the Android paradigm. So there is also a need for alternative phones, and some people are building these things as well. So one of them I mentioned here, and I will talk a bit about it, is Maemo. But there are also other projects like UB ports and Postmarket OS, which you might have heard of. And they're all offering alternative operating systems for phones, which help you escape the duopoly of Apple and Google. And also we have Anonymous Crypto, which currently is happening and in production mode with Monero and Zcash. And soon we will also have DarkFi, which is going to be the Dark Renaissance. But DarkFi is not just a project, it's an entire ecosystem. So first and foremost, it is a blockchain, but it does money and it does smart contracts. So with smart contracts, we're able to move this much more further than we're able to do with Zcash and Monero. So we have programmable finance, and we can enforce certain rule sets. So for example, we can have token vesting, and we can have various anonymous tokens, not just a single one, like a single base layer token. And also, what I say here in the slide, anonymous ecosystem, what I mean by that is we're able to have anonymous organization and communication. So this gives us peer-to-peer networks for task management, for chatting, and we're able to decentralize these things rather than being dependent on the cloud and a certain server, much like even good projects which are encrypted like Signal, they still depend on central servers. But we try to change this. Okay, next slide. So for the blockchain, we took the option of being private by default, which means privacy is enforced from the moment you're using it. It's not opt-in like many other things, and it's also kind of difficult to opt out as well, but it's a possibility. So if you need to, for some reason, if you need to de-anonymize yourself, you should be able to do it, but I also don't just recommend it. You should find ways to not end up in this kind of situation. Anonymous payments means that both the senders and the recipients are hidden from the public, and also the amounts and the types of tokens being sent are hidden from the public. Anonymous contracts means that participants who are, let's say, part of a DAO and do voting, it means they're anonymous as well. So it's a very different paradigm from transparent blockchains, where you can just feed the entire data set into an AI and it will figure out, oh yeah, this person and this wallet is sending this much money every day. And these people in these parts of the world are part of some DAO. We are able to hide all of this using technology like zero knowledge proofs. And when I mentioned the anonymous ecosystem, this means we're building decentralized and anonymous messaging, and also task management and file storage, anything that can be part of a peer-to-peer network and doesn't have to depend on cloud-based systems. So when it comes to messaging, there it's an old IRC protocol built in the 80s, but we expanded it with encryption and new technologies. So we're able to encrypt groups, we're able to encrypt direct messages, and it's as good as Signal when it comes to encryption. It's also completely anonymous, which means there is no concept of accounts or phone numbers or something like that. You just have nicknames and keys. So you also have plausible deniability. And that means anybody can also impersonate anyone else. And you can only prove that it's actually you by making a signature or revealing a certain attribute. So that means as long as you don't do it, you always have plausible deniability about writing something or sharing some files. And there is also spam protection using zero-knowledge proof techniques. So we're able to protect the network against spam, but we also do not de-anonymize the users who are doing the spam. But they need to solve certain puzzles or something so they can actually post a message if they begin spamming the network. We have a tool called Tau, T-A-U. It's used for task management. So much like if there are any developers, people often use GitHub for GitHub issues, or there are projects using Jira and things like that for task management. We built these also in a peer-to-peer fashion. So this allows you to anonymously organize yourself. It's peer-to-peer, which means it's censorship resistant. It allows you to host your files on your own nodes and nobody can actually delete them. It's also fully encrypted and permissioned. By permissioned, I mean that you can make groups. So people in a certain group can share an access key, and only them are able actually to see the tasks inside the group. So everyone is using the same network, but not everyone is able to see what certain groups are doing. So you can share that. You can choose who you share these things with. And decentralized file storage is also a peer-to-peer system where people can store files like NFT metadata or whistleblowing documents, anything that's actually necessary to stay online and not be deleted by some agency or government. So about DarkFi, we have all of the technology working currently in the final testing phases. Anonymous swaps and DAOs and payments, if you're technically knowledgeable enough, you can already use them. We will have a public testnet announced very soon as well. Our public dev chat, we have a public developer chat, and we also do meetings every Monday. So if you're interested in anything, you're very free to come and talk with us, and you can also put in your own topics if there is anything you like to discuss. And we plan to be production ready and go to the market by end of this year. Hopefully everything goes well. Okay, next slide. Yes, so I also mentioned alternative phones and operating systems. That is something, there is a small team. It's kind of a silent revolution happening in Europe. It's an alternative mobile OS, which is in no way similar to Android or Google. It's completely different. It used to be built by Nokia in 2009, but since the last 5 years or so, there's a small community that revived it and is actually updating it, and it's getting it to work well. And it's for some, it's a hobby project. For some, it's a very serious hobby project. But it's still a public thing, and it's not funded by corporations. Next slide. It's being built with free and open source software, and since Nokia built it in 2009, there were a lot of parts also that were proprietary and closed source, but the community has worked on it a lot and built ways to reverse engineer a lot of these proprietary counterparts, and some of them have also just been replaced with open source code. And the base system is quite minimal, which means you are actually the owner of your data and hardware, not unlike an Apple phone where it's very difficult to disable things, or an Android phone, which by default comes with all the Google services, which track you and share your data with the Google company. Some people try to replace the Androids with things like Lineage OS or Graphene and things like that. But I think it's still just it's a valid thing, but it's still not the best choice of actually claiming it. And you're able to choose with Maemo, you're able to choose what runs and what you want to use. So you start with a very minimal base, and then you pick the apps. Oh yeah, do I want GPS support? Yes, I will install it. Do I want phone calls? Yes, I will install it. And there is nothing that actually makes you you opt in into any kind of operation on the phone. The current state of it is there are working phone calls and working messaging like SMS and also instant messaging. There is working data, so you can use SIM cards to access the internet. It's not installable on all modern phones. It's more built for older and recyclable phones, which also give you interesting features like changing the IMEI number, and that's become very difficult on recent phones as well. So some of them are Motorola Droid 4, which is a phone from 2013, and it's still performing very well. So in contrast to many Android phones, you actually get a battery life of 3 or 4 days. And there's also a community kind of effort called Pine64. They build various tablets and phones based on open source hardware, and one of them is the Pine phone as well. So you can buy you're able to buy a Pine phone for $100, and you're able to use an alternative mobile OS. Currently, it's in the beta stage, and it's, as I mentioned, it's a very small community. So developers and any kind of funding are welcome. Mostly, we got funding from EU projects and privacy-oriented funds that actually want and need an alternative to Google and Apple. So yeah, it's happening, and I'm happy about it. And yeah, thank you for. I'm sorry I can't be there. Maybe the talk would have been more fun if I was there in person. But hopefully you enjoyed a little bit and makes you look these up. You can contact me at any point online. You'll find me easily. If you actually have questions and things, feel free. I will do my best to answer them. Have a great conference.
Yeah, man. Give it up for him.
Are you sick of being told you will own nothing and be happy?
Are you sick of being told how to live your life by the mainstream media?
Exactly what people think, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Are you exhausted with the truth community, focusing only on the problems?
Are you ready to do something about it?
Let's take action together. Join the Freedom Cell Network in January 2023 as we return with the Greater Reset for co-creation.
The Greater Reset is a five-day in-person and online gathering where solutions-focused speakers and organizations share practical steps for individual and collective liberation.
This year, we'll even hear experiences from real communities on the ground across multiple continents.
The Greater Reset 4 will focus on activating five focus areas over 5 days.
January 18th, liberate your mind, body, and soul.
January 19th, permaculture and food independence.
January 20th, agorism and parallel networks.
January 21st, take back our tech.
January 22nd, building free and conscious communities.
This is our time to co-create the world we want for 2030 and beyond.
Join us as we lay the foundation for the next stage of a free humanity.
Join us from January 18th to the 22nd, 2023, as we gather online, in person in Central Texas and Morelia, Mexico.
Join us for the Greater Reset 4, co-creation.
View the full speakers list and organize your local activation hub at thegreaterreset.org.